This is pulmonologist Dr. Frank Adams on Doctor Radio.
Dr. Frank Adams, we're back on Doctor Radio, Sirius XM 110. If you're just joining me, this is our pulmonology show, which means I'm a lung specialist on the faculty here at NYU Langone Health. Dr. Radio, collaboration between NYU Langone and Sirius XM. We're into our 15th year on the air. Proud to say been here from the beginning. Don't have to remind anybody about the pandemic and all that's gone on over the last 2+ years. Almost every day we get a headline. Yesterday the headline was our mayor, Mayor Adams, is down with COVID, and he thinks he got it at the Gridiron Dinner, which had been in D.C., and 65 people who attended that dinner have become positive for COVID-19. So if there had been far UVC light at that dinner, maybe those cases would not have taken place. So we need to know more about ultraviolet light and its application, its potential application to venues like that and to reduce transmission of all airborne organisms. And we want to have an expert tell us a lot about UV light, because I don't know much about it at all. So we're very happy to have Dr. David Brenner joining us for this segment. Dr. Brenner, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to tell everyone a little bit about Dr. David Brenner. He's Higgins Professor of Radiation Biophysics at the Columbia University Vagelos College of Physicians and Surgeons, Director of the Columbia University Center for Radiological Research. For those out there who have questions about UV light and its applications, I want to give you now the toll-free number, email address, how you could reach and talk directly to Dr. Brenner. Our number is 1-877-698-3627. Our email, docs@siriusxm.com. You can tweet us at NYU Docs. Dr. Brenner is taking time from his busy schedule to be with us for the next 25 minutes. Don't wait to the end of the show to ask your question. David, you got to give us a primer on UV light, the different types, different wavelengths, and then focus on what is called far UVC light.
Sure. So UV light is just the far end of visible light. So visible light has different wavelengths going from red to blue. And at the blue end of visible light is ultraviolet light. And ultraviolet light is invisible to our eyes, although some animals can actually see it. We know about ultraviolet light because of when we go out and get a suntan. That's because of ultraviolet light. And in turn, ultraviolet light is divided into three wavelength regions, UVA and UVB, which are the ones in sunlight that give us our suntans, and UVC, which is the one that we're going to talk about today.
I see. All right. That's very, very helpful. How about the application of ultraviolet light to reducing the transmission of organisms, viruses, bacteria? Is there a long history of study of that?
Yes, there is. So the UVC was first thought of in terms of killing microbes more than 100 years ago. And it's been used for many, many years for disinfecting pieces of equipment, for example, in surgical suites and in laboratories. And so it's known that UVC is very, very efficient at killing all sorts of microbes, bacteria and viruses both. But there is a downside to conventional UVC that's been used for many years. And that is that it's potentially a health hazard. So it can't be used when people are around. So you can empty a room and then sterilize that room. You can empty a train and sterilize that train. But you can't use conventional UVC when people are around. And of course, that's exactly when you do want to use it, because what we're concerned about is people transmitting the virus from one person to another when we're together and close together. So what we really want is a type of UVC that will kill airborne viruses, but can be safely and directly used in occupied locations.
I want to tell everyone out there again, Dr. David Brenner is with us. He's director of the Columbia University Center for Radiological Research. He's teaching us about ultraviolet light and specifically about UVC. Any questions, please don't wait to the end of the show. This great opportunity to talk to an expert. Call us at 1-877-698-3627. Email us docs@siriusxm.com. Tweet us at NYU Docs. David, the UV light I see in certain areas, like in the tuberculosis clinic or on medical wards, is that UVC?
That's UVC, but again, you have to be careful about using conventional UVC because you can't shine it directly on people because it's a potential health hazard both to the skin and to the eyes. So the breakthrough was happened now more than a decade ago that we realized that actually there are some wavelengths of UVC which have a dual advantage. They still kill microbes, bacteria, and viruses very efficiently, but they don't have the health hazards associated with conventionally used UVC. And it's a different wavelength of UVC light, and it's called far UVC, and it's just a little bit a lower wavelength, but it doesn't have the potential health hazards that conventional germicidal UVC light has. And there's a purely physics reason for that, this far UVC light really doesn't travel very far, can't penetrate very deeply into any sort of biological material. So on the very surface of our skin, for example, we have a layer of dead cells, everybody does, and the far UVC can't penetrate through that layer of dead cells, so it can't reach the living cells in it. Further down in our skin. And likewise in our eyes, on the very surface of our eye on top of the cornea, it's a so-called tear layer. And far UVC light, again, can't penetrate through this tear layer to get to the living cells. So in terms of safety for human beings, we are protected by physical barriers from the far UVC, by the dead cell layer at the surface of our skin, the tear layer at the surface of our eyes. But on the other hand, bacteria and viruses are very, very small indeed. So far UVC can certainly penetrate into them and kill them. So that's really the essence of it. But it's both potentially effective for killing bacteria and viruses, but also safe for being able to be used where people are around.
All right. This is extremely important. I want to tell everyone out there if they have any questions for Dr. David Brenner, and he's with us for a little under now 20 minutes. Please don't wait. Let's get your questions coming now. Call us at 1-877-698-3627. You can email us docs@siriusxm.com. You can tweet us at NYU Docs. So, David, the recent literature now has shown that this could be applied to a large room as opposed to a small area.
That's correct. And the early studies were certainly done in a laboratory setting, but of course, it was always known that it needs to be translated to a full size room size setting. And that first full-sized study was done at the University of Leeds in the UK. And basically, they had a room which they continuously filled with microbes. And then they turned on the far UVC lights and then continued to pump bacteria and microbes into the room to simulate a real-life room where people are talking and coughing and sneezing and shouting. And what they found is that very, very rapidly, the level of microbes in the room dramatically decreased and maintained that decrease as there was a continuous pumping of microbes into that room. Mm-hmm. It was a really quite dramatic decrease, and far more than you could get from any other potential air cleaner, any sort of filtration system or ventilation system. So it was a very successful study that really showed that fire UVC does work in terms of a large-scale room situation.
And this, as you pointed out earlier, this covers really all microbes, bacteria, influenza, COVID-19, any kind of variant, really right across the board?
That's correct. UV light really doesn't care the details of the virus. Right. So it would kill the original SARS-CoV-2 virus and all its variants pretty well, equally efficiently. It's been shown that it kills influenza virus very efficiently. And most importantly, that the viruses of the future, the ones we don't know about, and the ones that we're very nervous about, the next pandemic, far UVC light is going to be able to kill those again equally efficiently, because it doesn't care about the details of the structure of the genome or the structure of the proteins. All it does is hit DNA and RNA and damage the DNA and RNA and prevent the virus or bacteria from dividing, from multiplying.
And tuberculosis as well, tuberculosis bacilli.
TB, measles, influenza, SARS-CoV-2, all indeed.
Now, people listening, I want to be sure that if someone goes on Amazon and looks for, they're not going to find far UVC lamps, are they? Are they just going to find UVC lamps?
That's correct. If you go on Amazon right now, you'll potentially find a few things which call themselves far UVC, but you need to be pretty careful. And that there are certainly UVC lights that are being manufactured and sold right now, but I don't think you'll find them on Amazon.
All right. If anyone has a question, and I think it's important to clarify any questions you have now, call us at 1-877-698-3627. Dr. David Brenner is going to be with us, but it's only about 10 minutes. It's going quickly, as it always does here on Dr. Radio. You can email us, docs@SiriusXM.com. You can tweet us at NYU Docs. David, in terms of positioning, would the lamps be placed on the ceiling? Is that how it would be applied, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. They would be placed on the ceiling, either in place of conventional lighting, so you'd have a combined visible light and far UVC light, or as well next to the visible lights. So the different manufacturers have come up with different designs. But yes, always it's going to be on the ceiling.
Mm-hmm. And relatively inexpensive?
At the moment, a little more expensive than visible lighting, but not hugely so. And certainly the prices are dropping rapidly. And just to give you an idea of price, a small corner store, for example, 1,000 square feet, something like that, that would probably cost around $1,000 to install far UVC lighting. And a bigger institution like a big school, far, far bigger, maybe it would cost $50,000. Now we are talking significant dollars, but also $50,000 to prevent the spread of SARS-CoV-2 or a future pandemic, or very importantly, to prevent yearly epidemics of influenza. And I think that's a pretty small price to pay.
Absolutely. Now, I would think people would be lining up to get this technology into their venue. Governments, I would think, would be excited about it. Has there been that type of a response?
No, well, yes and no. I mean, the issue is that it's new. And we really need to have very definitive answers to two questions. Well, first of all, is it safe? And secondly, does it work? Mm-hmm. So the does it work is we're starting to get really definitive answers. And the answer is that, yes, it works actually quite dramatically. And there's a number that I can give you, that the way one compares different methodologies for basically cleansing a room of contamination is air changes per hour, equivalent air changes per hour. So how many times effectively is the air, is the air in the room being changed every hour? So typical approaches to the problem, filtration, ventilation, can get us something like 7 or 8 air changes per hour, which is pretty decent. The study in Leeds that I referred to before gave us 180 air changes per hour. So that's effectively the equivalent of stepping outside, of being outside. So what far UVC is offering is the essentially the equivalent of being outside in terms of transmission of viruses from one person to another. Mm-hmm. So we're getting pretty good evidence for efficacy. Mm-hmm. So the other issue, of course, is it safe? And the evidence is building up quite strongly over the past decade. And there have been dozens of peer-reviewed published papers on safety. And I think one indication of safety is that the US government, which has regulations about how much UV light people can be exposed to per day or per year, This last January actually changed their regulations for far UVC, such that you are now allowed to have actually 7 times more exposure than used to be the case. So they've looked into all the data that's out there and have come up with the conclusion that it's actually a lot safer than we thought. And again, one, I should stress that we need to keep within the regulatory limits. That's very important. You can't just willy-nilly put as much UV light as you want into any situation. Right. But as long as you keep within the regulatory limits, I think it's fair to say that it's going to be safe. And that means it can be used in all sorts of situations where people are coming together. Mm-hmm. Restaurants, hospitals, schools, offices, the theaters, elevators, and anywhere where we're right now, we're a bit nervous about being close to people without our masks on.
Absolutely. We have two questions, two people on the line I want to get to. We have about 5 minutes. I think that'll work well. Let's first go to Greg. Greg is in Florida. Good morning, Greg.
Hey, good morning. I wanted to know if the UV filters, the UV lights that go in the air handlers of air conditioners systems do anything at all that are designed.
That's a good question. And so those are conventional UV lights which sit inside the air conditioners. And they do a little bit, but they don't do too much, because what they do is decontaminate the air inside the air conditioner. But what we really want is to be able to decontaminate the air actually between you and I when we're standing together in a room. So what we'd really like is a way of directly decontaminating the air when you and I are standing together in a room, and decontaminating the air inside an air conditioner doesn't do that much to help. It does a little. Directly decontaminating the air actually in the room, as I've talked about before, actually has a pretty dramatic effect in terms of decreasing the amount of virus in the room.
All right, Greg, thanks so much for that question. It's a good one, and all questions are great. And we have about 4 minutes, so that's plenty of time. Let's go to David. David's calling us from British Columbia. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I may have missed the beginning of your show, but I didn't hear if it works against molds, and I was wondering if it generates any ozone.
Okay, so two-part question. Any effect on fungus or mold?
Well, the answer, those are two good questions, I will say. It probably doesn't have a huge effect on molds. And the physical reason for that is that molds are actually physically bigger than bacteria and viruses. So it's not clear that the far UVC light will penetrate right through those molds and kill those molds. So to be determined, I guess, well, in the future. But really, for the moment, our focus, as everybody's is on viruses. And the second issue is, does far UVC lamps generate ozone? Well, all UV lamps generate small amounts of ozone. But you just have to measure and see whether it's a significant amount. And basically the answer is that the amounts of ozone that are being produced are absolutely minuscule and way below the regulatory limit of how much ozone is allowed in a room, for example. So I don't think ozone is a safety issue, because it's always measured with all the lamps that are being developed, and the level of ozone that's being produced is minuscule.
All right. David, as always, we appreciate your input into the show and your questions. We're down to about 2 to 3 minutes. David, this has been very, very important. I'm so happy you were here with us. What do you anticipate will happen next? Do you think more time is going to be needed for the safety studies before this is implemented, or do you think it could be implemented at any time?
I think it can be implemented at any time, just as long as we keep within the regulatory limits. I mean, that's very important. Mm-hmm. But there's so much safety research out there already, both short-term exposures, long-term exposures, long-term effects on the skin, short-term effects on the skin, as well as the eyes. So I think it is ready for large-scale exposure, and listening to the story in your news item about this spreader event, the big dinner in Washington, D.C., one can certainly imagine if far UVC lights had been installed in that room when the dinner took place, perhaps it would not have been a spreader event.
Right, and I'm hoping, because there were a lot of government officials there, this will be something that may be brought to the surface quickly. David Brenner, thank you so much for helping us understand this area and illuminating this for us. I think we probably will be discussing this again, and hope we can get you back. And as you pointed out, unfortunately, this is not the last pandemic. We have to be prepared for other organisms, and far UVC seems to be something that needs to happen. So thank you so much for being with us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. David Brenner, we have a few seconds just to tell you that there's another hour coming up. Our pulmonology show programming, of course, is for 2 hours. We're going to split it. Our first 30 minutes, Dr. Ashwin Basavaraj is going to join us. He's an eminent pulmonologist here at NYU Grossman School of Medicine and expert in bronchiectasis and NTM. He's with us for that first 30 minutes. And then we're going to open the lines, take all your questions. So do not go away. We've got a great second hour to go. Stay with us. We'll be back in 3 minutes.